MSW Media. Big shout out today to Helix Sleep. Take their 2-minute sleep quiz and they'll match you to a mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/dailybeans and use code HELIXPARTNER20. Hello, and welcome to the Daily Beans for Monday, March 25th, 2024. Today, Tammy Murphy has dropped out of the Pennsylvania U.S. Senate race, clearing the way for Andy Kim. Republican House Rep Mike Gallagher is leaving early. Former RNC chair, serial liar, and coup plotter Ronna McDaniel has been hired by NBC for $300,000 a year. The Senate has passed a $1.2 trillion funding bill, ending the threat of a shutdown. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton could see his criminal charges dropped. The Biden administration permanent ceasefire UN resolution was vetoed by Russia and China. And allies of Leonard Leo have mounted a months-long offensive against the D.C. Attorney General Brian Schwab. I'm Allison Gill.
And I'm Dana Goldberg.
Happy Monday, my friend. Big political moves this weekend.
Oh, a lot. I mean, not surprising it's going to be like this for the rest of eternity.
I know. But man, we are now one step closer to Hakeem Jeffries getting the gavel before we even have to vote to flip the House.
So, oh my God, unbelievable.
That's fun. We're going to talk about that in the hot notes. How was your weekend? You had that really amazing gala with the First Lady.
I did. I actually got to meet Dr. Jill Biden. I had a photo opportunity with her with a select group of people. And Ashley was there. Her daughter was there. And she introduced her mom. And Jill Biden is just such a staunch advocate for the LGBTQ community. I think people don't realize how important it is for the youth out there to have an administration in the White House that is willing to say, trans lives matter. Our trans children need to be protected. LGBTQ people should have all of the same rights and, you know, marriage and blah, 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 blah. It's powerful. So it was lovely to hear her speak. And she's just a really wonderful, brilliant woman and just to be around her. And we honored Jean Smart. And so if you're a fan of Hacks, you know, and of course, Designing Women and Mare Vieston, like everything, she's just fucking brilliant. The nicest person in the world. And Sterling is also just a really lovely man. And I'm sure some of you listening are like, they're not gay. Well, they are allies and they have helped move this fight forward. And so the HRC galas don't just honor people in the LGBTQ community. We also often honor the people that are helping our fight from the outside in. So it was a wonderful night, raised a lot of money and, got a couple fun photos. Maybe I'll post them in the Beans Patreon page or whatever, the you know, where you have to have a special to be in that Facebook group. You know, you'll tell the people what I was just trying to explain.
Yeah, it's our private social media group for patrons.
Yeah.
That would be outstanding. And otherwise, you can just go to DG Comedy. I hope you post some of those photos.
Oh, I do on Instagram. So if you're listening to this, yeah, for sure. Instagram's the place for them. If you're listening to this, that's where you're going to see a lot of the photos from all of my events.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, my friend, for doing this work.
Yes.
With the HRC. This is a big show today. Later, I'm going to be speaking with the founder of Healthcare Voices, a stage 4 cancer survivor, Laura Packard. We're going to talk about the 14th anniversary of the Affordable Care Act, which was just this past Saturday. And then tomorrow, I'm going to speak with Yousuf Dahl, who is on a mission to repeal the Strom Thurmond Amendment, which is still around, believe it or not. And it prevents people with prior drug distribution convictions from getting housing. And then Wednesday, we'll be joined by the host of Justice Matters, Glenn Kirshner. It's a big week for us. Dana, by the way, you'll be joining the Daily Beans Live in Portland on July 10th and Seattle on July 11th.
Everybody, I will indeed, and I cannot wait.
I'm so excited. I just can't. I'm so excited. I feel like Jesse Spanos.
I'm so excited to do live bean shows with you. Are you kidding me? This is going to be a blast. We're going to have fun.
It'll be amazing. So everyone, if you want to come see us in Portland and Seattle in July, tickets are at AllisonGill.com or DailyBeansPod.com and click on tour wherever you get them. And everyone, there's a big hearing today in Manhattan, in the Manhattan DA's election interference hush money case. It's at 10 Eastern, 10 a.m. Eastern, and you're going to want to follow follow who I normally follow, Adam Klasfeld, Katie Fang, Elisa Rubin, on social media to get updates from that hearing. So we have a lot of news to get to today, and we have such a big show today. We have so much to get to. I'm going to be doing a whole separate block on investigations and how Leonard Leo, the head of the Federalist Society, is responding to these investigations in a B block for you. But first, we have some quick hits.
And to make a long story short,
too late.
All right, great news. Tammy Murphy will announce Sunday that she's dropping out of the race for U.S. Senate, abruptly ending her campaign after 4 months. That's according to the New Jersey Globe. That clears the way for Rep. Andy Kim, a Democrat from Morristown, to likely win the Democratic nomination and become the strong favorite to replace indicted Senator Bob Menendez. Murphy made the decision on Saturday evening after a discussion with her family, including her husband, Governor Phil Murphy, and political advisors. The conclusion was that she had a bloody path, quote unquote, to winning the June 4th primary, even if she wrote a large personal check to partly self-fund her own campaign.
Oh, wow. Thank you for that. And the next quick hit, the Senate passed a $1.2 trillion package of spending bills in the early morning hours on Saturday, a long overdue action nearly 6 months into the budget year that will push any threats of a government shutdown to the fall. The bill now goes to President Joe Biden to be signed into law. The vote was 74-24. It came after funding had expired for the agencies at midnight, but the White House sent out a notice shortly after the deadline announcing the Office of Management and Budget had ceased shutdown preparations because there was a high degree of confidence that Congress would pass the legislation and the president would sign it on Saturday.
Excellent. So at least we get to avoid these shutdown crises until October, right before the election. So that'll be fun. October's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, man. All right. We have a lot of news to get to. Let's hit the hot notes. Hot notes. All right. From Melanie Zanona at CNN, GOP Rep. Mike Gallagher of Wisconsin will resign from Congress early, handing another blow to Speaker Mike Johnson and his razor-thin Republican majority. And as, you know, per usual, when you hand a blow to Mike Johnson, his adopted son's porn watching app goes off. So we have to keep that in mind. In a statement, Gallagher confirmed that he will resign effective April 19th. Now, Gallagher did not include a reason, just saying he's had conversations with his family. The House already has three vacancies left by two Republicans and one Democrat, and Republican Rep. Ken Buck of Colorado said he's leaving Congress. Now, once Buck and Gallagher leave, Johnson will be down to a 217-213 majority, meaning Republicans will only be able to lose one vote with full attendance to pass anything. NBC News first reported the news of Gallagher's decision. Now, Gallagher is a chairman of the high-profile Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party, and Gallagher noted the hunt for a new chair once he departs in his announcement. Now, quote, "I've worked closely with House Republican leadership on this timeline, and I look forward to seeing Speaker Johnson appoint a new chair to carry out the important mission of the Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party." That's what he said in a statement. House Majority Leader Steve Scalise downplayed the tightening majority, saying, "It is tough with a 5-seat majority. It is tough with a 2-seat. 1 seat will be the same." That's what Scalise told CNN. "We all have to work together," he said. "Yeah, you are the last do-nothing Congress passed 904 bills. Y'all are on 47, and most of them are just to keep the government open." So
brutal.
Well, five will be like two will be like one. We still won't be able to get shit done.
Yeah.
Quote, "We have to unite as if we're going to get things done. We have proven with bills like our energy bill, our border security bill, what? And some other big things that we've done. And we can come together and get things done for hardworking families." They haven't gotten shit done. Your border security bill? Okay. The announcement comes on a tumultuous day for the House GOP. The House voted to pass legislation to fund the government through the rest of the fiscal year, a compromise with Democrats that angered the far right flank of the party. A majority of House Republicans voted against the Johnson-backed funding legislation, and Marjorie Taylor Greene took procedural steps to oust the speaker, a move the Georgia congresswoman described as a warning. Okay, so your motion to vacate isn't a real motion to vacate? Okay, whatever. The House started a two-week recess around the Easter holiday Friday, meaning Gallagher will only have a handful of legislative days before he leaves Congress. Now, what's missing, Dana, from this CNN story is the importance of the date that he's leaving. Gallagher said he's leaving April 19th, and everyone went, oh, okay. But that screws the GOP conference, because on April 19th, that's the day it will be too late to have a special election for his seat in Wisconsin.
He knows what he's doing.
That'll leave his seat vacant for the rest of the term. So just like Ken Buck screwing over Lauren Boebert in Colorado's 4th district by forcing her into a primary where she's currently in last place, Mike Gallagher's departure screws over the GOP by leaving a vacant seat until next year. Now, keep in mind that Ken Buck said that while his departure angers his, you know, fellow Republicans, he said they'll be more angry with the next three Republicans that resign. So Gallagher's one. Who are the other two? Maybe we'll hear something from Tom McClintock this week. Who knows?
Amazing. All right. This is from Michael Brinbaum at The Times. The veteran NBC anchor Chuck Todd, love to hate him, publicly attacked the leadership of his own network on Sunday, questioning why NBC News hired Ronna McDaniel, the former chairwoman of the Republican National Committee, and declaring live on air, quote, "There's a reason why there are a lot of journalists at NBC News uncomfortable with this." Mr. Todd's comments at Meet the Press, the flagship political show he anchored for 9 years, were an extraordinary escalation of behind-the-scenes tension simmering within NBC News and its cable cousin, MSNBC, since the announcement on Friday that Ms. McDaniel had been brought on board as a political analyst. I could understand why. Some journalists at NBC were taken aback by the decision to hire Ms. McDaniel, citing her tenure as the RNC under Donald Trump, when she regularly echoed Donald's criticisms of the news media, and in particular, the left-leaning programs on MSNBC. Now, Rashida Jones, the MSNBC president, called several prominent anchors over the weekend to assure them that they would not be forced to book Ms. McDaniel on their shows, according to two people briefed on the conversations who requested anonymity to share details meant to be private. Ms. McDaniel made her NBC debut on Meet the Press on Sunday in an appearance that current host Kristen Welker told viewers had been scheduled weeks before Ms. McDaniel joined as a paid contributor. Quote, "This will be a news interview and not involved in her hiring." That's from Welker. After the interview aired, Ms. Welker was joined on the set, a live discussion panel that included Chuck Todd, who began his remarks by saying, quote, "Let me deal with the elephant in the room." Yeah, he went on to say, "I think our bosses owe you an apology for putting you in this situation, because I don't know what to believe. Now is she, she is now a paid contributor by NBC News, so I have no idea whether any answer she gave to you was because she didn't want to mess up her contract," end quote.
Wow.
Yep. Chuck Todd said that Ms. McDaniel, quote, "has credibility issues." That's the under-fucking statement of the day. And he went on to say, "There's a reason why there are a lot of journalists at NBC News uncomfortable with this, because many of our professional dealings with the RNC over the last 6 years have been met with gaslighting, have been met with character assassination." He also said, "So when NBC made the decision to give her NBC News' credibility, you got to ask yourself, what does she bring to NBC News?" In her interview on Sunday with Ms. McDaniel, Ms. Welker pressed the former Republican leader as to whether she believed that President Biden had legitimately won the 2020 presidential election. And she said, "Fair and square, he won." That was McDaniel. "It's certified. It's done." Quote, "Ronna, why has it taken you until now to be able to say that?" That was from Welker. And she replied, "I'm going to push back a little because I do think it's fair to say there were problems in 2020 and to say that does not mean he's not the legitimate president." Why? Just fucking stop.
She can't stop lying.
She can't stop, won't stop.
Nope. And this both sides bullshit with fascists and coup plotters and election deniers has got to end. And just like shame on NBC News. It's going to cost them a lot, NBC, if you're listening, it's going to cost you a lot less to buy out her contract and fire her than you will lose in ad revenue and credibility if you keep her on.
Yeah.
There was a whole thing. I mean, Twitter went nuts. And there was a story out from the Wall Street Journal that was like, the talent at MSNBC was like, what the fuck? And so that's when the MSNBC lady was like, you don't have to have her on your show if you don't want. It's like this terrible backpedaling. It's still a horrible decision that she's still an NBC paid contributor. $300,000
a year. It's a lot of fucking money to lie to the general public,
Dana, especially from a network that oversees MSNBC that gets rid of people like Mehdi Hasan and Tiffany Cross. It's flames on the side of my face, heaving breaths. It's unconscionable. All right, next up from Patrick Wintour at The Guardian. After months of vetoing other UN Security Council resolutions in an effort to defend Israel's military campaign in Gaza, the U.S. has, in recent weeks, gone on to the diplomatic front foot in New York, drafting and tabling its own resolution that was put to a vote on Friday before being vetoed by Russia and China. The U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, said the resolution would send a strong signal. But what was that signal precisely? So here's what the resolution said. The opening wording on an immediate ceasefire was complex, even kind of convoluted. It urged the UN to, quote, determine the imperative for an immediate and sustained ceasefire to protect civilians on all sides, allow for the delivery of essential humanitarian assistance, and alleviate humanitarian suffering. So this is a permanent ceasefire, sustained, not temporary. It thereby supported, quote, diplomatic efforts to secure such a ceasefire in connection with the release of all remaining hostages. Now, the U.S.'s critics, including Russia, noted that the text did not explicitly use the word call in terms of a ceasefire. It also implied the ceasefire would be conditional on the release of all hostages. The text marked an important tonal shift for the U.S., since previously the U.S. had called for a ceasefire as soon as practicable, but the change was not as substantive as some headlines may suggest. The U.S. claimed its draft had the support of at least 9 of the 15 strong Security Council members, enough for the vote to pass so long as no veto was wielded by one of the 5 Security Council members. In the end, it secured 11 votes, but 3 voted against it, including the veto-wielding Russia and China, and Guyana abstained. So why did they veto Russia and China? The Russian deputy ambassador to the UN, Dmitry Polyansky, warned reporters on Thursday, we are not satisfied with anything which doesn't call for an immediate ceasefire. After the vote, he said, at the coordination stage, almost all Security Council members expressed the view that the demand for an immediate ceasefire should not be conditional on the release of hostages or the condemnation of Hamas. He argued that the effect of making a ceasefire conditional on the release of all hostages would be to endorse leaving hundreds of thousands of innocent Palestinian civilians exposed to continued Israeli attacks until the point when Hamas and Israel reached an agreement. In the chamber, the Russian ambassador told the Security Council the resolution was hypocritical and a spectacle that put no real pressure on Israel over its war crimes. Moscow said that the episode showed the U.S. administration was more interested in throwing a bone to American voters and persuading a domestic audience it was being even-handed in the crisis. Explaining Guyana's abstention, the South American country's representative said, contrary to media reports, this resolution does not call for an immediate ceasefire. Because, again, it's conditioned on the release of the hostages that Hamas took. Mm-hmm. She also added that the demand of the ceasefire should not be linked to or conditioned on the release of hostages. Two wrongs cannot make a right, and the Palestinian people should not be collectively punished and themselves be held hostages for the crimes of others. So what happens now? A rival draft resolution favored by African states has been circulating that's more explicit about the immediate ceasefire, but this will not be put to a vote on Friday. France's ambassador to the UN has said an alternative draft championed by the non-permanent members of the Security Council calling for an immediate ceasefire in Ramadan, quote, will come to the table and be put to a vote. We need a ceasefire and then talks. But such are the entrenched divisions in the Security Council that this resolution will probably also be vetoed, this time by the US, potentially the fourth of this conflict. For many observers, the episode will confirm the Security Council was simply broken. I mean, they put these resolutions on the table. They don't like the wording, the semantics. They argue that it doesn't actually mean a ceasefire if it does, or that it does if it doesn't. They condition it on certain things. Mm-hmm. It gets vetoed. Probably not the real reason that Russia vetoed this.
Right.
But then it gives them an off-ramp to do so. So anyway, just absolutely nuanced, complicated situation. I am glad that the U.S. is now calling for a permanent ceasefire.
I am in agreement with you. Thank you, my friend. This one's from Austin, American Statesman, Texas Attorney General. And I do not like this story, by the way. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton is nearing a resolution to the 9-year-old securities fraud charges that have dogged his tenure as the state's top attorney through a special agreement with prosecutors. This is from the American Statesman. That's what we have learned. Under a draft agreement, prosecutors would dismiss felony charges against Paxton if he successfully completes the terms of the deal, according to three sources familiar with the negotiations. The sources, with knowledge of the discussions between Paxton's legal team and prosecutor Brian Weiss, a Houston attorney appointed to handle the case, said the terms could include community service, advanced legal education classes, and six-figure restitution, among other possible punishment. Two sources said that the restitution could be between $300,000 and $400,000. Under the conditions, Paxton likely would not have to formally enter a plea, but must not violate any law for an extended period. Okay. I'm not sure about that. Paxton, as we know, is that Republican in Texas, could have faced up to 99 years in prison if convicted. Think about that. He could have faced 99 years in prison. He's about to fucking get off on probate. I can't.
Right.
Such agreements generally do not require a judge's approval, underscoring the wide authority that Texas prosecutors have to resolve cases, particularly in urban Texas counties. Felony cases are frequently worked out through similar agreements, sometimes referred to as conditional dismissals, pretrial intervention, or deferred prosecution agreements that are outside the traditional path of case and keep a conviction off a defendant's record without approval from a judge. That just sounds like a lawyer could get bought off. I'm just saying.
Yeah, not only that, but how often do they do these for, you know, marginalized communities? And
exactly. You know, absolutely.
These are just for like people like Ken Paxton.
Mm-hmm. Weiss and Codrell have been working in recent weeks to resolve the charges before April 15th trial date in Harris County State District Court in Houston. This week, Weiss announced that a final pretrial hearing that was set for this past Wednesday has been rescheduled for Tuesday. It is expected that attorneys will inform District Judge Andrea Beal of the agreement and the resolution of the case at the Tuesday hearing. However, the finale of Paxton's securities fraud case does not conclude all his legal troubles. A federal probe that began in 2020 based on a whistleblower complaints that Paxton had abused his authority and curried favor in a mutually beneficial relationship with former Austin real estate developer Nate Paul, that's ongoing after a grand jury has impaneled in San Antonio last summer. So you know what? Good. And also, I'm pretty sure this was brought by his own party, right? This new case. It was Republicans that were fucking pissed at him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much all there are in Texas politics right now. But yes, absolutely. But he was brought up on impeachment charges by Republicans and then acquitted on impeachment charges by Republicans.
Right. So, true.
After 9 years, if he gets these charges dismissed, he'd get off with a fine, like you said, and some community service.
It's just bullshit.
It's absolute bullshit. However, the feds are still investigating, so go feds. Okay. We will be right back. I have a story for you about Leonard Leo and the Attorney General in D.C. And then, of course, after that, I'll be speaking with my good friend Laura Packard about the Affordable Care Act anniversary. And then, of course, we'll follow that up with the good news. Everybody stick around. We'll be right back. After these messages, we'll be right back. Hey, everybody, it's AG. As you know, I spent most of my life having difficulty falling asleep and staying asleep. I would wake up stiff and sore and discombobulated, and it wasn't until I got my custom mattress from Helix Sleep that all my sleep problems were over. And now I pass out quickly, I sleep throughout the night, and I wake up feeling completely refreshed every morning. Just go to helixsleep.com/dailybeans and take their 2-minute sleep quiz, and they'll match you to a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life, and you'll get 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows. Helix Sleep has a wide range of 20 different mattresses, from the celebrated Lux Collection to the newly released Elite Collection that takes sleep to the next level. They've designed a mattress for every sleep preference under the sun, or the moon, as it were. and even made sure to have mattresses for the little ones and the big and tall sleepers. Helix also has mattresses with cooling technology so you can be comfortable no matter what the season is. When I took the Helix sleep quiz, I was matched to the Helix Midnight because, as you know, and all of America knows now, I prefer side sleeping on a medium firm bed. It's perfect for me. It's got the exact amount of support I need and it's comfortable. It's amazing. I fall asleep immediately. So if you're looking for a mattress, you can't beat Helix. They have a 100-night in-home trial to make sure it's the perfect fit for you. And their mattresses come with a 10 or 15-year warranty because Helix means quality. So go take that Helix sleep quiz. In 2 short minutes, you'll be matched with the perfect mattress for you and your body. It'll be shipped directly to your door, no extra cost. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/dailybeans and use code HELIXPARTNER20. This is their best offer. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. I wanted to take a minute and share with you a very important story that got kind of buried in the news this week. It's from Heidi Prisbola at Politico. Allies of Leonard Leo have mounted a months-long offensive against the man investigating the Judicial Activists Network. That's the Washington, D.C. Attorney General, Brian Schwab. Now, since news of the probe broke last August, the GOP chairs of powerful congressional committees launched their own investigations of Schwab's investigation. Conservative media wrote articles criticizing Schwab on unrelated crime issues based on a social media post from a top Leo lieutenant and a group of his Republican law enforcement peers who sent letters warning Schwab to stand down. Leo, as we know, is the Federalist Society co-chair who's been called former President Trump's court whisperer for helping to choose and advocate for his Supreme Court nominees. His aligned network of tax-exempt nonprofits is also a major contributor to Project 2025, an initiative seeking to create a government in waiting for a second Trump term. The white-hot pressure campaign targeting Schwab attests to the growing range of Leo's influence. Beyond its work in promoting the conservative legal movement, his billion-dollar network of nonprofits has funded conservative media, Republican attorneys general, and the campaign funds of leading congressional figures. Schwab has been probing Leonard Leo since he received a complaint about whether Leo-aligned groups violated tax laws governing nonprofit organizations. That's what Politico reported last August. Tax-exempt groups in Leo's network have spent millions of dollars on his for-profit consulting business, CRC Advisors. But since news of the probe became public, its legal basis has been challenged by 12 GOP attorneys general who are current or former members of the Republican Attorneys General Association. That's RAGA. The Concord Fund, one of Leo's primary nonprofits, and its predecessor, the Judicial Crisis Network, have long been RAGA's biggest funder, directing $20 million to it since 2014, according to tax filings. Meanwhile, GOP Representatives Jim Jordan, chair of the House Judiciary Committee, and Jim Comer, who heads the Oversight Committee, on October 30th announced a probe of Schwab's Leo investigation, saying it was politically motivated. Here we are again with Republicans investigating the investigators. According to a federal disclosure form dated October 20th, the Concord Fund had hired a Virginia lobbying firm to handle issues related to oversight and law enforcement matters, over which Jordan and Comer happened to have jurisdiction. A Judiciary Committee spokesperson said there's no connection between the two. Quote, the decision to launch a probe was not influenced by the lobbying firm. Any suggestion that it was is lazy, in bad faith, and completely ridiculous. It's well known that this probe is part of a broader portfolio the congressmen are pushing related to the weaponization of the federal government, unquote. In December, the House chairs then threatened to subpoena Schwab. One day later, Concord Fund made a $250,000 contribution, its first to a federal political action committee, in nearly 9 years. and it went to a fundraising group allied with House GOP leadership. That's according to the FEC. Jordan and Comer's intervention in a law enforcement probe angered activist groups that have long scrutinized his network. Quote, Leonard Leo is working to implement policies with a vision that's far too extreme for most Americans. Now, members of Congress have weaponized their government power against his critics. That's what Caroline Ciccone, a president of Accountable US, a progressive watchdog group, said. Project 2025's manifesto promises to defund the Department of Justice, dismantle the FBI, break up the Department of Homeland Security, and eliminate the Departments of Education and Commerce. Quote, Leo may consider himself to be beyond scrutiny, but he isn't. He and his network must be held to the same standards as everyday Americans. That's what Ciccone said. Ciccone? I used to have a friend with that last name. It was Ciccone, so maybe that's how it's pronounced. Recently, a round of articles in conservative media claimed that Schwab angered D.C. residents at a city panel discussion about youth crime. The articles were pegged to a critical tweet. Its author was Carrie Severino, who leads the Concord Fund. During the January 30th panel of city officials and residents, Schwab spoke at length about his frustration that many underage offenders aren't being arrested, making it hard to prosecute. A day later, Severino sent a tweet of a Fox News spot, including one of Schwab's comments later in the discussion, quote, we cannot prosecute and arrest our way out of it, he said of crime problems. Now, a recording of this meeting shows Schwab was responding to a specific question about which resources the city should offer to help rehabilitate minors who are not prosecuted. Since D.C. does not have statehood, Schwab has jurisdiction only over juvenile prosecutions and some adult misdemeanors. That's why he said we can't prosecute and arrest our way out of it. But nonetheless, Severino's tweet was retweeted and quoted numerous times by numerous conservative accounts with large followings. And conservative media sites, including the Washington Examiner and Fox News, then wrote stories relying on the same out-of-context viral tweet. Madness, read the February 1st Fox News headline. The quote came from Dan Bishop, Republican from North Carolina, who was retweeting Severino. A couple of weeks after the January panel discussion, the Examiner followed up with a February 12th article asserting that Schwab's approach to D.C.'s crime had drawn criticism four times. Once again, Severino's January 31st quote was its primary evidence. Now, Severino, of course, didn't respond to a text seeking comment for this article. The Concord Fund is part of Leo's constellation of tax-shielded groups registered as charities and social welfare organizations. The fund spent millions of dollars on media campaigns to support the confirmation of Trump's Supreme Court picks, which were culled from a list authored by Leonard Leo, among others. The nonprofit is also a longstanding client of Leo's for-profit consulting firm and paid the company CRC Advisors $3.8 million between July of 2021 and July of 2022, almost $4 million in a year. The Concord Fund is among the nonprofits named in a complaint sent to Schwab's office and the IRS from a progressive watchdog group that claims that the handful of Leo-aligned groups are violating nonprofit tax laws by paying CRC for communication services. Schwab is probing the network following a complaint that nonprofit groups associated with the judicial activist violated a tax law that bars charitable groups from being used for personal enrichment. Through his spokesperson, Gabe Shoglo Rubenstein, Schwab declined to comment. It's the latest pressure campaign that includes Schwab's peers in a dozen GOP-led states. In a September 20th letter to Schwab, they insisted he doesn't have the authority to investigate Leo's empire and asked him to reconsider and suggested that conservative attorneys general might come under pressure to investigate progressive-oriented nonprofits if Schwab doesn't back down. All of the law enforcement signatories are or have been members of RAGA, the Republican Attorneys General Association. That and the Virginia Attorney General's office did not respond to three emails seeking comment. Gene Takagi, a California lawyer who's represented hundreds of nonprofits, called the letter very unusual. Quote, I have not seen a group of attorneys general target a fellow attorney general before. That's what Takagi said, who's also a publisher for the nonprofit law blog. Attorneys general, however, are increasingly clashing along party lines over issues such as gun safety. Now, Karen Gano, a former assistant attorney general in Connecticut, agreed. Quote, I've never seen a group of attorneys general attacking another attorney general in that way, particularly with a targeted political viewpoint and a threat. I've never seen it in any context, she said. She's also a former president of the National Association of State Charity Officials. The attorney general's letter challenged Schwab's jurisdiction to investigate Leo's nonprofits, a claim which has been disputed by some charitable tax experts, including officers in other states. It said Schwab's actions could oblige other state attorneys general to investigate political groups across the political spectrum. That's according to a copy obtained by Politico. Quote, once the dam breaks, we and our successors will be under intense pressure to investigate the inner workings of every abortion advocacy group, every immigration advocacy group, every environmental advocacy group. That's what the Republicans' attorney generals warned. We can only stop it if each of us conscientiously stays in his or her lane. So stop investigating Leonard Leo, or we're going to investigate all your nonprofits. The Wall Street Journal editorial board picked up the letter in warning of Hobbesian lawfare that threatens state sovereignty if Schwab doesn't stand down. In a separate September 12th letter, Virginia Attorney General Jason Mieres, a Republican, warned Schwab that the entities Schwab was targeting are, quote, subject to the exclusive oversight of my office. The Concord Fund was incorporated in Virginia. Another Leo-affiliated group cited in the complaint to Schwab is the 85 Fund, which was originally known as the Judicial Education Project. While it was incorporated in Virginia in 2004, the 85 Fund and its predecessors had maintained its principal office in D.C. for at least a decade. Now, the group moved its mailing address to a UPS store in Texas in a strip mall amid Schwab's investigation. Spokespersons for Mieres and Raga didn't respond to three emails about that. Gano, the former head of the Connecticut Attorney General's charitable unit, said that where a charity was incorporated isn't the only criteria that determines jurisdiction. It has to do with what activity they engage in that state, she said. Mieres' letter contained detailed legal language making his case and requested a staff meeting to resolve the matter. The letter began by suggesting that Schwab could instead be focused on violent crime in D.C., including carjackings, according to copy. Mieres had also has personal ties to Leo's inner circle. In 2013, Mieres started a consulting firm called Madison Strategies with Gary Marks, who was part of a small group that founded Severino's Concord Fund, then called the Judicial Crisis Network. Marks was, for a time, its executive director. He is also part of the leadership team of the 85 Fund, previously the Judicial Education Project, according to the latest IRS filings. So they're all connected. Now, Leo's lawyer has said he is not cooperating with Schwab's probe. Leo joined the firm as a chair in 2020 and his aligned nonprofits are longstanding CRC clients. Prior to Leo's tenure, the firm had significant experience running politically focused public relations campaigns. It's best known for its work with the Swift Boat veterans in 2004, which criticized former president candidate John Kerry, a decorated Vietnam War veteran, for his actions in that war. All lies, by the way. Most recently, I worked on behalf of then Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh in the wake of the Christine Blasey Ford claim in his 2018 confirmation hearings that Kavanaugh had sexually assaulted her when they were both in high school. While Schwab's office has not confirmed the existence of its probe, Politico broke the news on August 22nd that Leo was under criminal investigation. A few days later, a group called CatholicVote.org, which received $1.75 million from Concord Fund in 2021 and 2022, wrote an article that Schwab was targeting Leo for his role in, quote, setting the stage for the overturning of Roe v. Wade. In a recent interview, Leo emphasized the critical role that shaping public opinion plays in the network's next frontier of advocacy. He spoke of the need for more conservative allies in C-suites and boardrooms, and spoke about the need for conservatives to, quote, build talent pipelines in the media and entertainment industry. So that's where his focus is going next, I guess. He is breaking the law, I'm pretty sure, with his nonprofits. And of course, leave it to Jim Comer and Jim Jordan to investigate the attorney general in D.C. who's investigating Leo. All right, everybody. It is the 14th anniversary of the Affordable Care Act, and joining me next to discuss is, of course, Laura Packard. Stick around. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. This past Saturday was the 14th anniversary, yes, 14 years of the Affordable Care Act being signed into law by President Obama. And joining me today to discuss that is Laura Packard. She's the founder of Healthcare Voices and a stage 4 cancer survivor. Welcome, Laura.
Thanks for having me.
It's so good to see you again, my friend. It's been a minute.
Yeah, I moved to Virginia last year, so I've been busy.
Yeah, that's a busy place. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit today because, first of all, I saw and shared on social media your run-in with Representative Zach Nunn, who represents Iowa's 3rd District in Congress, in U.S. Congress. Tell us a little bit about that meeting and how it went, because if you haven't seen it, I've shared it on my Twitter feed, but talk about that meeting.
Well, I had the chance to go to Des Moines. I was going to deliver some petitions to Zach Nunn's office from Iowans calling on him to not attack the Affordable Care Act. So I was there prepared to deliver the petitions to his office. And then we found out that he was doing this event this at the airport. So we decided, what better opportunity to go talk to him about healthcare than to head over to the airport and speak to him in person? So we were not allowed into his carefully managed event, but we were able to catch up with him in the hallway after. And if you watch the clip, you can see what he had to say.
Yeah, he was real nice, very understanding. No, he wasn't. talk a little bit about that exchange because, you know, we're coming up on 2024. Every election, we have to defend the Affordable Care Act. And this clip, your discussion has a lot to do with how important the Affordable Care Act has been to you personally.
Right, because I am a cancer survivor. And without the Affordable Care Act, I never could have afforded the care that I needed to be here today. So I just asked him to promise not to promise to vote against any bill that would cut the Affordable Care Act. And he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't make that promise. He wouldn't answer my question. So I had to ask him again. And that's when he hit me with the, did you hear what I said? And yeah, I heard you not answering my question, which is why I had to ask it again. And did he answer it the second time? I will let you watch to find out.
Yeah. First of all, thanks for going to Iowa to deliver those petitions and to fight for the ACA, because it's made a huge difference. I believe 6 in 10 Americans have a positive view of the Affordable Care Act. And the Republicans knew that back when this was happening, when it was going through the process. And the Supreme Court knew it when they were considering whether or not to gut it. Because once these programs are enacted, these Democratic programs from Democrats, like Social Security, Medicare, Affordable Care Act, once they're enacted and people get those benefits, they are very loath to let them go. And they knew that. But yet they continue to try to repeal it. They continue to run on the very bad side of this, which is what they do right now for most things, you know, gun violence prevention, Dobbs, and now, you know, Affordable Care Act. But how important do you think this issue is going to be? I mean, we just start stacking them up, these issues that we're on the right side of. It's like we kicked ass on healthcare in the last 3 or 4 election cycles. And now we've add Dobbs to the pile and add gun violence to the pile. And it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse for Republicans. Talk a little bit about how you're gearing up to defend the Affordable Care Act in this election.
Well, I think Representative Nunn is a perfect example of they don't want to talk about it. President Trump has promised if he's back in office, he's going to, quote unquote, terminate the Affordable Care Act. But nobody below him wants to talk about it. But we know that they are going to be yes men and fall in line, regardless of whether they want to talk about it now. When Trump does what he does, we know that they will all fall into lockstep behind him. So I think what's most important to consider with this election is whether people understand the importance of voting, whether they get out and vote. It's great to convert people and make sure that people realize, you know, what's at stake. But motivating people to vote at all, I think, will make the difference. It's going to be about whether people stay at home or whether they go vote, not necessarily whether they flip votes. I don't think that there's too many people that having voted for Biden would now consider voting for Trump, given their polar opposites in policies, and probably vice versa. If you voted for Trump two times, I'm not sure that you're really going to be a Biden voter. So it's all about getting the people that might sit this one out to actually go vote. And also making people understand the importance of voting for one of the two. Because if you, for the people that voted for Jill Stein or didn't vote at all in 2016, we all saw the repercussions of that. So even if you're mad at Biden's policies or what Biden's done, at the end of the day, we are going to have President Biden or President Trump. So if you see any difference at all in life under either of those two, it is critical to go vote and pick one of them, because at the end of the day, one of them is going to be president. And if you don't vote, or if you vote for somebody else, you're missing the opportunity to decide who that person's going to be.
Yes. And not voting, let me be clear about this. Not voting doesn't send a message to anyone to change the system, because like you said, it's one or the other. It's a switch. And one of these candidates can be moved and gives you a seat at the table, where with the other candidate, there's no table. So it's very important. And I think one of the best ways to do that, we text bank, we phone bank, we send postcards. I love all those ways. We knock doors. But I think one of the most effective ways is to talk to people in your community and in your family who you know are not really plugged in, not really active, don't really care about politics, and just tell them what it means to you or your friends or marginalized communities, or if you're part of a marginalized community, including disabled people, people with long COVID, people with health conditions, autoimmune diseases, and just say, look, I know you don't normally vote, but maybe this time, could you just do this for me, or do this for Jennifer, or do this for Bill, or whoever? It would really, really help me out, because it's going to be one or the other. And here's how it negatively impacts me and my friends if Trump is in office. I think that the conversion rate for getting the vote out is the highest when we actually have personal conversations with people in our communities and families.
Mm-hmm. And I think people thought before, you know, how bad could a Trump presidency be? And we saw how bad it could be. Or the idea of, oh, the Supreme Court will never overturn Roe versus Wade. It doesn't really matter who you vote for, because it's all going to stay the same. That is not the case. And if you value your freedoms, from your freedom to see a doctor and get the health care you need, to bodily autonomy and making your own choices for your body, to valuing our democracy itself, just because we have lived in a democracy for the past 200 some years does not mean that we are guaranteed that in the future. Democracies turn into autocracies all the time. And there is no magic wand that will prevent that from ever happening here. What stops that is us. What stops that is, don't vote for somebody that's going to establish a dictatorship.
Yeah. And just with healthcare alone, if Trump is in office and he terminates the Affordable Care Act, 45 million people could lose their healthcare. 45 million. And that might be a number that you can take to your friends and family and say, you know, 45 million people, that means somebody that you know or you. And you know, we can also talk about how we can improve the Affordable Care Act. We know President Biden is now working on lowering drug prices by finally being able to negotiate Medicare prices. And that is having a huge impact and will have a huge impact on everybody's pocketbook. Were it not for Republicans, we would have $35 insulin for everyone and not just people on Medicare. So that is probably another way you can spin this, not spin it, but present it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it was a choice of Republicans in the Senate to ask the parliamentarian to pull that to make a ruling. So that would have to be pulled out of the bill. So Republicans didn't have to do that. They chose to do that. They chose to take away $35 insulin from everybody not on Medicare. And it's their choice not to vote for bills that would lower drug prices for everyone. So if you want cheaper health care, cheaper health insurance, you need to vote for the people that'll make that happen.
Agreed. And can you tell everybody where they can help, how they can help, where they can find you so that they can get involved? I mean, there's so many simple things that just take minutes that you can do to help, can let people know.
Well, you can find me on Twitter, such that the sad state of Twitter these days, but you can find me on Twitter at L Packard, and you can find me everywhere else at Laura Packard Activist. So I am always talking about these issues, educating you on what's going on and what you can do, because our health and our lives depend on what happens this November.
Yeah. And it's just one spoke in a wheel of things that are just making it obvious who the right choice is in November, who the right choices are in November, because local politics have a huge impact on how these healthcare dollars are spent. I think about all the states that don't have, that haven't activated their Medicare money.
Right. If you live in Georgia or Florida or Wisconsin, your Republican state legislatures are preventing hundreds of thousands, millions of Americans in those states from having affordable health insurance. They are choosing not to expand Medicaid to cover working families in your state. They are refusing free federal money to make your state and your state hospital system healthier. They are choosing that for political reasons. And until they're held accountable, they're going to keep doing that.
Yeah. So keep that in mind. Politics, all politics are local politics, my friends. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. I hope everybody finds and follows Laura Packard as soon as they can, founder of Healthcare Voices and stage 4 cancer survivor. Thank you again for sharing your photos and your stories and your interactions with our U.S. Congress members online. It's very brave. And thank you for lending a voice to this issue.
Thanks. And I'll be headed to Arizona next. So we'll see if I'm able to talk to another congressman about his votes against healthcare.
Please do talk to all of them. They're all dicks. All right. Thank you very much. Everybody stick around. We'll be right back with the good news. Hey, everybody, welcome back. It's time for the good news.
Who likes good news, everyone? Then good news, everyone.
And if you have any good news, confessions, corrections, you want to play What the Mutt, Cat Me If You Can, What the Hell Is In That Shell, What's the Model of Your Oxalotl, Opine and the Bovine, What the Heckwine, What the Fark Is In Your Ark, send it all into us. If you have a thesis or dissertation title, a shout out to a loved one, a self shout out, I love those. Whoopie Blanky stuffed animal stories, send those to us. If you have a student debt relief story or a story about any Democratic program that has made a huge difference in your life, send those to me. I send those to the White House. I just want you to know. And they love getting them. If you have a great story about VA healthcare or student debt relief, I think I said that already, send those in to us. And just baby pictures, frog orgies, anything at all. dailybeanspod.com. Click on contact. First up from Andrew, pronouns he and they. Hello, AG, Dana, and the crew of the pod. I am also a member of the Beans crew living in the totality path for the April 8th eclipse. I was also just outside the path of totality for 2017. And we're only expecting 2 minutes of total coverage here on the 8th rather than the 4.5 of other areas of totality. If you wish to fly into any of the smaller towns in Illinois or Missouri, I think the best chance is to fly into Paducah, Kentucky. Flights come down from Chicago to the regional airport. We're proud of our airport in Paducah. It even was just upgraded from an old terminal to a new terminal. I'm considering heading to the Cape Girardeau. Is that how I say that? When I get off work. We're expecting lots of tourism in our area. And sending love to you both and the crew. I hope we Eclipse people can arrange a meetup or to have a viewing for the Beans. Here is my silly cat who likes to sleep on his back and use my shoulder as a nap spot. Oh, look at the kitty. Yeah, somebody should set up start a thread or an event in our Facebook Daily Beans group and see about people having eclipse get-togethers with other Leguminati. That would be rad.
That would be rad. All right, this is from Adam, pronouns he and him. My best friend and now roommate Rose introduced me to the Leguminati. You two are very rare in being able to talk about the news and keep me calm. For both of our pet taxes, here is my very gay boy Cliff trying out the Cirque du Soleil. Cirque du Soleil, and his rotten shit little brother, Peanut. Peanut clearly has a good helping of Pitbull, but your guesses are good as ours with Cliff. Please keep doing what you do. Adam, thank you so much.
Look at the babies.
Oh, beautiful doggies.
Adorbs. Cute. You want to take the next one too, just in case?
Sure. This one's from Anonymous,
just
though.
Just in case?
Just in case. You heard her, just in case the shit's about to go down. Dana, can you take this one just in case there's something hard to pronounce in this next submission?
Like, what?
Thanks. Appreciate you.
Just in case of what?
I don't know. Who knows what this is going to be about?
Takes me out, you know, then you'll have, then we'll have.
All right. Coming back. We're fine, everyone.
Good news, preppers. Okay.
Well, I'm fine. This is from Anonymous. No pronouns given. Hi. Love the show. All the shows. Start my day with the beans every day. Live in unusually dry SoCal, but we have had a lot of rain this year. A toad, maybe frog, has moved into our backyard and he's so loud. It feels like this might be frog orgy adjacent. Thanks for all you do. And there is, if you are in the Patreon, we have a link to the noise from the frog.
Yeah.
And it is loud.
I think Desiree is going to add it into the mix right here.
Oh, fantastic. Good. See?
Yeah. Look at that. Look how good that is. Our producers, our team, top quality. Just in case, you got it. All right, next up, for what model is your axolotl? Someone brought it to our attention that the Wikipedia entry for the axolotl reads like a cake song. Their heads are wide and their eyes are lidless. Their limbs are underdeveloped and possess long, thin digits. That's the opening of the axolotl Wikipedia entry. I don't know who said this, but if you do know who said this, this was found on the internet. Please send it in to us. Let us know. All right. Next up from Lori, pronouns she and her. Hi, Allison, Dana, and the Leguminati. This is a shout out to myself and also a thank you to AG because I wouldn't have done it without her. I've been talking for a while about starting a Patreon to offer video lessons and techniques in my field, which is handmade pottery. I was dithering because my workspace is kind of janky and I worried that I might not be interesting enough. And what do I do if nobody signs up? Then I'd feel awful. You know, all those ways we doubt ourselves. Yes, Lori, I know those. Then I was listening to older episodes of The Beans and someone mentioned the kitchen table days. I thought, did AG wait until everything was perfect? I'm sure she had doubts. Everybody does. But did she let those stop her? No. No, she did not. So I started my pottery Patreon. And I wanted AG to know she's inspiring people out here in all kinds of ways to strive and take risks. So thank you, Allison. And thank you, Leguminati, for being such a loving and supportive community. You can find me on Patreon at Fine Mess Pottery if you're interested. There'll be a link in the show notes. I live in a house of many cats, so it was hard to choose one pod pet pick. But here's a photo of 17-year-old Petey, the gray one, and his younger brother, Finn, who love each other very, very much and spend most of the time cuddled up like this. Oh, look at the babies. That pottery's cool. Oh, it's wow.
Beautiful.
These are really, really good. Now, I wonder if you live in a house with many cats, does fur get stuck in the pottery, like reinforcing it? I think that would be great.
That's a fair question. All right. Good. This one's from Nancy, pronouns she and her. Greetings, Beans Queens from Ruby Red, Oklahoma. I'm writing to give you hope. I was a Republican for 40 plus years. My family has been Republican literally since the Civil War. In 2016, I reluctantly voted for Trump. I knew he was a clown. I just didn't know he was a clown with a flamethrower. The pandemic was the eye-opener for me. I started speaking out through Republican voters against Trump. I left the GOP, voted for Biden in 2020. Then came January 6th and the Dobbs decision, which exposed the corruption and cruelty that not just Trump, but the entire party that I had believed in for decades. I feel naive and used, and I'm angry as hell. So not only will I never vote for Trump, I will never vote for another Republican, ever. They have broken my trust, but they have achieved something unprecedented in my family. They have made me a Democrat, and I suspect that I'm not alone. For my pet tax, I present Ruthie and Luna. They were dumped in my rural yard as very small kittens. Ruthie is named for Ruth Bader Ginsburg, not the white collar. They join their older brother. Oh, note the white collar. Excuse me. That makes sense. They join their older brother, Neville, who was also abandoned in my yard in 2016. Thank you for all you do for democracy. And Nancy, thank you for the vulnerability and for sharing the story. I love that in 2016, we got Trump and you got kittens. I think that's maybe what got you through. Some of this is tiny little kittens. So that's your reward for becoming a Democrat.
And look at this beautiful tuxie. She has a descent collar.
Yeah, I love it. This story, I think there's more Nancys out there than we even know. And I know that we see some of them on TV and they're captured on The Daily Show and those sorts of things. But I really do think there's a lot of people that like had enough. They fucking had enough.
Yeah, especially with COVID and Dobbs. And I mean, you know, I mean, everything, right? But the cruelty.
Yeah.
It's an eye opener, she said. And it is, I think, for a lot of people. So Nancy, thanks for sharing that. And again, yeah, like Dana said, thanks for the vulnerability and being able to share that, because that's important, I think, for other people to hear. So I appreciate you. And speaking of sharing stuff that you want other people to hear, send it to us, dailybeanspod.com, and click on contact. Dana, do you have any final thoughts for today?
If you happen to be new to the podcast, or you just don't always hit this end of the good news, I do have a show on my birthday, April 12th in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. You can get tickets on my website at danagoldberg.com. I'm looking forward to celebrating my birthday with those of you who've already purchased tickets. And if you haven't, go get them and tell everyone you know. And I'm going to repeat that in a minute after Allison gives us our sign off.
Which I'll do right now. We'll be back in your ears tomorrow. Until then, please take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Take care of the planet. Take care of your mental health. Take care of your family. Vote blue over Q.
And please take everyone you know with you.
I've been AG.
And I've been DG.
And them's the Beans. The Daily Beans is written and executive produced by Allison Gill, with additional research and reporting by Dana Goldberg. Sound design and editing is by Desiree McFarlane, with art and web design by Joelle Reeder with Moxie Design Studios. Music for The Daily Beans is written and performed by They Might Be Giants, and the show is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, please visit mswmedia.com. MSW Media.
Hi, I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
Hi, this is John Cryer, and I am hosting a new 7-part true crime podcast called Lawyers, Guns, and Money. That'll challenge everything you think you know about U.S. covert operations and presidential misconduct. From Jack Bryan, the director of American PSYOP, comes the incredible true story of John Mattis, a newly sworn-in Miami public defender in the 1980s who has found himself completely in over his head.
I step off the plane, and there is a van with a couple guys with Uzis. And one of them in broken English said, "Welcome to Bogota, John."
Mattis's first felony defendant has been arrested for having a machine gun and tells Mattis a dangerous secret.
He was shipping arms into Central America on behalf of the CIA. As a first-time lawyer, I want to act like I know what I'm doing.
But with the help of a Colombian drug smuggler...
How much money the CIA raised by hitting up drug dealers?
A lot of money, millions of dollars.
An Alabama mercenary...
They were prepared to die to the last man. I saw this in them. I saw the fire in their eyes. and they made me their war chief.
And a newly elected senator, John Kerry.
We are looking at allegations of drug running, gun smuggling, conspiracy to commit murder and murder itself.
He'll fight to free his client.
The judge said, show me in a courtroom how we were at war.
Expose an illegal war being run by the White House.
I mean, I wanted him involved, but I didn't want to be on record as doing it.
And somehow stay alive in the process.
I just escaped a kidnapping by the CIA in Costa Rica.
This is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
So you have a man in an Armani suit standing on the bow of a boat with a rocket launcher and says, if I lose sight of you, I will launch. You will be vaporized.
Available everywhere starting October 29th, or get it ad-free and early starting October 22nd at lawyersgunsandmoney.supercast.com. There you'll find bonus episodes along with exclusive content. Subscribe now.